It is our Constitution. And in trial, as well as now in the Supreme Court briefing, that's still a little scary. Now, one thing the state is really good at doing is publishing pamphlets with great pictures of kids. And so what we did is, this is one of the state's own exhibits at trial. They're explaining what K-12 finance is. And so whenever we talk about Article 9, Section 1, we use their own document, where they said, what does Washington State Constitution say about K-12 public school funding? And there's that great quote, Article 9, Section 1. And the state itself said, this constitutional provision is unique to Washington. While other states have constitutional provisions related to education, no other state makes K-12 education the paramount duty of the state. So what was the trial about? What's this lawsuit about? What's the argument before the Supreme Court about? Well, boils down to what are those four words? Paramount, ample, education, and all. So let's first look at what paramount means. Now the state's argument at trial was, you know, we've got a lot of important things to do. You heard about a bunch of things. There's the social services and health and prison. You've got all these important things, transportation, drilling tunnels in Seattle, all this important stuff. And we just sort of have to balance it. And our argument to the court was, no, paramount means what it says. It's number one. And the trial court agreed. Paramount means more important than everything else. Our Constitution therefore requires the state to amply fund the education of all children before it funds anything else. And this is a crucial ruling, because we all know the state's in hard economic time, revenues are short. But you know what? The general fund today has more than enough money to fully fund education without raising a single penny in taxes. More than enough money. Now, what we don't have enough money in the general fund for is to fund all the non-paramount stuff. But fully funding education, we have it all. Now, what's the state saying on appeal? Well, so far, their brief has made no argument that this paramount ruling is wrong. None. So let's now go to the second part of the Constitution. What does the ample mean? Now, the state has said, at least the trial, they said, well, ample just means, you know, barely enough. We fill in. We fill in the gap at the end. And the school districts aren't going insolvent. That's ample enough. And in the course of this case, only one school district went insolvent, you know, Bader. So we're obviously doing enough. Brandy Dorn gave a great example. In his testimony, he testified through deposition. He put it in very common sense terms. He said, you know, if you're the mayor of a town, would you rather have an ample water supply for your citizens or an adequate water supply for your citizens? Of course, you'd rather have an ample one, because ample is more than just adequate. And that's what the judge ruled. Ample means considerably more than just adequate or merely sufficient. Ample really does mean ample. What is the state saying on appeal? They're saying, well, they have a footnote that says, well, you know, maybe that's too generous. Maybe ample is a little too strong a word, at least the way the judge has construed it. But they're really not contesting that word ample. So now let's go to the word education. Now, what we said is education starts with, and this is one of the exhibits of trial, this is a cutout from the Seattle School District decision. This is that passage that I'm sure most people are familiar with. The state Supreme Court said, education is more than reading, writing, arithmetic. It's the knowledge and skills kids need to succeed in today's economy, compete today's economy, and meaningfully participate in our democracy. So what we told the trial judge, you know, that's the Supreme Court said that education means. And you know what? The legislature, when they passed 1209, remember that? When they said education is reading and comprehension, writing and skill, knowing and applying core concepts of math, science, civics, etc., the legislature has said what that knowledge and skill is. And you know what? The state went further. They adopted their essential academic learning requirements. And remember, these are essential academic learning requirements. They're not like optional academic learning suggestions. This is what the state has said. Every single kid, in fact, 10th grade, Ehlers, the state's determination is every single 10th grader needs to know that, not just to be able to compete in our economy and participate in our democracy, but just also to learn what they need to learn in the 11th and 12th grade, and that's what the testimony of the trial was. So what did the court rule? Well, another thing that what the court ruled is education means knowledge and skills citizens need to compete in today's economy and meaningfully participate in our state's democracy. And today, where are those knowledge and skills found? Well, it's that quote that I told you about in the Seattle School District decision. get those four numbered provisions of House Bill 1209 that we're all familiar with, and it's the nine E-learns. That's what the word education means. So when you have a paramount duty to amply fund something, it's amply funding that education for every single kid. What's the state's argument? No. Their argument is education is the basic ed program we fund. So the word, if your paramount duty is
circular
to fund the program that you've decided to fund, it's a tautology. That's exactly what the proper rule is, a tautology. This is where probably one of the key arguments are going to be before the Supreme Court. What does that word education mean? Because if it means whatever program the state, when Marty Brown was talking about funds that are exempt, programs that are exempt, I mean, those are the basic ed programs. If that's what education means, whatever program the legislature's defined, well, that means they're defining what the Constitution means. That's not the way the Constitution system works. So that's going to be one of the big arguments. Now, the next argument is, what does all mean? Now, at trial, the state's argument was basically, wink, wink, nod, nod, all really can't mean all, because, a lot of kids, they at least parents, families that are really tough neighborhoods, those kids, so all really can't mean all. And we went back to, well, what is the state telling everybody in Washington? They're essential academic learning requirements. These are standards that define what all students should know and be able to do, not what all kids from nice families and nice neighborhoods should be able to do, but all kids. We also then talked about democracy. We had Secretary of State Sam Reed testify in the deposition as well. We talked about how we've got this voter's pamphlet with all this information. It goes to every single voter, and you've got to be able to read all this stuff. I mean, we're a heavy initiative state. You have to be able to read and comprehend what's going on. And Secretary of State Reed reminded the court of the fact that, remember this governor's race we had a while ago? I have about 3 million votes were cast. It was decided by 133 votes. In a testimony at trial about levies and bonds that pass or fail by one vote, I mean, all really does mean all. Another part of the state had was, you're always going to have murder flippers. They really don't need to know all this stuff. And so we said, if you're an employer in Washington, the state requires you to post these notices about what your rights are. So even the burger flipper has to know, be able to read and comprehend and understand that. And, that's not the only state-mandated form that all employers have to post. So all employees in Washington have to know, read, understand their rights and what their resources are. We also looked at it from just a cold, callous, dollar and cent approach on this all. State's own studies show that, for example, for every dollar you spend in early childhood education, the state saves $2.53. Got the governor's own budget proposals that say, for example, each year we spend $6,200 on educating kids, $28,000 you have to incarcerate. Strictly from a dollar and cent standpoint, it makes sense. So what does all mean? Well, the court ruled education is a great equalizer in our democracy, equipping children born into the less privileged segments of our state with the tools they need to compete on a level playing field with those born into wealth or privilege. Part of the witnesses in our case, we had Roberto Maestas, who passed away just the other day from El Centro de la Raza. We had the president of the Seattle Urban League, James Kelly, talking about the importance of rights role that education means, that it is the equalizer. And unfortunately, right now, a lot of our schools are operating as the great perpetuator. Well to do, the people that are ahead keep staying ahead, and the people that need the help the most don't have the resources to go to get. So what does that word all mean? The court rule all means every child, not just the kids who are privileged or politically popular or easy to teach, every single child. Now what's the state's argument? First, on appeal, this is impossible, unobtainable, and bound to fail, because all kids really can't learn our own academic standards that we've set for all kids to learn. And I'll get to that in a little bit, our response on that. So what the court rules is paramount to all education mean? I just explained. And so then the question is, is the state meeting its paramount duty? Is the funding for education unconstitutionally low? And what we did is, in this case, we focused on 13 focus districts, which were districts that we plaintiffs and the state agreed would be a representative sample of districts across the state. Testifying live at trial, we had Superintendent Blair from Chimicum, we had Superintendent Emo from Colville, we had Superintendent Nick Brossett from Edmonds, and then we had longtime Superintendent Yakima Ben Soria. They were both grilled on the stand for over a day each. Then we also had several other focus districts as well that testified via deposition. Now, we called before, and the state didn't call any suits to try to defend their case. And what we then did is looked at the unconstitutional funding. Now, as you all know, the state has tons of funding formulas. And they tend to be sort of complicated and sort of complex. And what the state's battle plan was is they were going to parade all these funding formulas in front of the trial court and say, look, this is so complicated and such a mess, frankly, there are probably only a handful of people in the state that understand how all these things work. Judge, you certainly won't be able to understand it, so we're going to muddy up the water, that's the state's position, and you can't find that the state's violating the Constitution, because remember, it's we have to prove the violation beyond a reasonable doubt, and they're going to sow all kinds of seeds of doubt. Well, at trial, what we did is we said, well, let's forget the let's just wipe the table clean. What does a school district need to do to educate its kids? Well, first you need school buildings. And where do we get the numbers? We got these from the F-196. So we got the state auditor's office, we got their testimony, where they said, oh, these accounting codes that you use for the F-196, those are mandated by the state. And we, the state auditor's office, we audit them to verify that they're fully accurate, that they're using the right codes, that they're putting the right dollars in the right categories. So we use the state's own. Figure out what the school building, how much do you spend on school buildings? How much do you spend on classroom teaching? How much do you spend on pupil transportation? Librarians, counselors, the non-teaching personnel, certificated school building administration, minor things like utilities, your water, electricity, stuff like that, extracurricular, and food service. You add all those up. And every single school district superintendent that testified this before live trial painted a similar type of chart. The numbers varied, but the sizes were about the same. And what we did is we just then stacked that up against, here's the state's basic ed funding. Every case is about 45%. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower. But this is what the state is saying fully funds education. We then gave the state the benefit of the doubt and said, well, you know, what's that 1728 money and the LEA money and all, everything else, the things that you add, their total state funding, you're still at 58%. So you take all the state dollars, you're 58%. Well, what's filling this gap? Well, that's federal funds and local levies, Bill Gates, with his donation of computer equipment, things like that. That's what the state was saying is full funding. Now, what the state, we also showed, is the state knows that they're not fully funding. We used, again, the state's own documents. They know how much school districts actually have to pay for certificated and classified administrators, and the state knows how much they pay. The testimony trial was consistent that most superintendents cannot hire at what the state pays. They have to supplement. The state's, another example was the state very well knows how much diesel has been rising, because, you know, they track it, because, you know, system uses diesel. So the state knows how much diesel prices have been going up since 2000, and then this is what they pay the school districts. That's how quickly their diesel price reimbursements are going. Another example, again, these are all the state's own documents. I didn't need to make charts. I didn't have to make examples. Reading through the state's own stuff was great. State shows that here's, if you have someone who lives, the school is in Dayton, that first bus stop is 36.5 miles away by road. That's what the bus actually has to travel. This is what the state's funding formula pays. As a profile, is 16 miles. State knows. NERSC, last example. The state's own testament shows they know how much school districts spend for books, materials, and IT, and things like that. And they know how much they reimburse. So it's not just their underfunding, they know. For example, this year it was over $500 million. So that's half a billion bucks. The state knows they're underfunded. The state said, well, but we're getting better, Judge. We're getting better, Judge. And we showed that, well, you know, the trend is actually going the wrong way. For example, with maintenance, the amount they reimburse for maintenance. Or just how much they spend, you know, with their matching funds for school construction. Again, going the wrong way. With respect to what the state itself says are urgent repair needs. These are the urgent repair applications that meet the state standards for being urgent. $10 million in 07-09, they funded four of what they admit are urgent repairs. And this is one of my favorite exhibits. Every time the state said we're not underfunded, this is one of the state's own documents, the state underfunding is not disputed. So this is what we were showing with respect to the funding gap. Now, the first thing the state's argument is in the Supreme Court is, well, the state doesn't have to pay for local enhancements, and everything above that state-funded number is just the local enhancement. The testimony was consistent in trial that the school districts cannot serve all kids. They cannot make or provide enough education for all kids to meet state standards with what they have, the total number, never mind what the state number. And the state would say, no, well, that's a bunch of fluff. You clearly have enough money to succeed. And we looked at several ways of looking at it. One was look at results. Now, I know that some people swear at the Wassels, some swear by the Wassels. But the fact of the matter was, throughout the trial, the state's position was the Wassel is one of the most rigorous and reliable assessments of student achievement in the country. So we said, fine. What's your own rigorous and reliable assessment of student achievement show? And it shows that statewide, 62% of 10th graders don't know the science that the state has said every single one of them needs to know. 63% don't know the math that the state has said every single one of them needs to know. 25% don't have the reading skills that the state has said every single 10th grader needs to know. And 28% fail to graduate with degrees. And that's statewide. We went through, for example, income segments and the minority segments in some districts are worse than other districts. We looked at, for example, the Wassel standards, and this is, again, using this what the state throughout trial said is rigorous and reliable. You know, if you're not low income or white, you do relatively well, but if you happen to be a minority or low income, you don't. There's this big gap. And what was the state's response to that? Their response was, well, these low socioeconomic kids are bound to fail. In fact, 1 year ago today, right now, we were cross-examining one of the state's experts. The state had a bunch of experts that flew in from out of state to testify about how wonderful the state was. And 1 year ago today, there was Dr. Armour testifying that, you know, these kids from low socioeconomic status, no one's able to teach these kids. So you've just got to accept that they're going to fail. You're going to have these gaps, and it's unfortunate, but that's what you're going to have. The court didn't buy it. The trial court states. And one of the things we showed is, you know, they're not bound to fail. We use this one example, again, all states on documents. We use Spokane School District as an example where the state ELL funding for English language learners is 845, this was that one school year, 845 million. Spokane supplemented it with 1.6 million of their own. And what did that do? This is, again, more state documents. The statewide, less than 40% of the ELL kids passed through on the Wassel exams. Spokane, 92%. Extra money actually does produce results. So was the funding unconstitutionally low? The court said yes. The state is violating the Constitution. So what did it order the state to do? It said, well, the legislature is ordered to proceed with real and measurable progress to fully fund actual dollar cost, not these hypothetical costs in the form of the funding formulas, the actual dollar cost of amply providing all Washington children with the education that's mandated in the court's ruling. That's that substantive knowledge and skills, the Seattle School District ruling, Hospital 1209, and the healers. That is what the state was ordered to do. Now, what's the state's argument on appeal? Well, one of their arguments is, you know, this is ordering a cost study. Cost studies are pointless wastes of money. I mean, you can never figure out what will actually work. You can never put a price tag on it. Judge Jordy has to do something really stupid and wasting taxpayers' money. And we said, oh, really? Because, you know, we seem to remember this basic ed financing task force. And they came out with a program, and they put a price tag on it. So it's possible to do. And in fact, state, one of your own exhibits at trial was, you put a price tag on 2261 if it was funded. And OSPI, they came up with a price tag as well. So you can't come up with a price tag. You can't cost things out. So it's not a total waste of money. Impossible. There's a transportation study that the state did, which is not just aggregate all across the state, but, you know, they went line by line, item by item, district by district, and they figured out, for example, with Chittenden School District, that they are short-changing Chittenden, $351,408 every year, not 407, not 409, but 408. So you can actually come up with real numbers, and statewide it came to $244 million per biennium that the state itself acknowledges they're underfunding education, just the transportation element. And this isn't the field trips and the sports events, this is just to and from student transportation. So with respect to the state, what the state was ordered to do, the state's other argument was, well, hey, we've already done it, 2261. Give us a pass, Judge. We've done exactly what you told us to do. What we did is we went back to, well, remember 1978, Sale School District ruling, and our lead plaintiff, Stephanie McCleary, she was 13 in 1978, Sale School District. The Supreme Court said the Constitution requires your state to fully fund education. When we filed the suit, her daughter, Kelsey, was 13. The entire generation passed while the state wasn't doing it. The other lead plaintiff, Patty Venom, she was in high school when the Sale School District decision was issued. Her daughter, Haley, was in high school when we filed this suit. The entire generation passed. And over those 30 years, the state had been intending to comply with Article 9, Section 1. It started with Governor Evans, his State of the State address, where he said, this was back in 1978. Now, it is important to provide long-term, consistent, dependable financing for basic education. And we had similar quotes from Nancy LeRae, and Governor Spellman, and Governor Locke, and Governor Gregoire from her beginning of her first term in office, again, about how we're serious, we're really going to do it now. And the one thing that really happened over these 30 years is the state did a lot of studies. They did over 100 studies. They studied this thing to death. It started with the Miller Report, and we went through a trial with all the reports that the state has done over the years that all confirmed the same thing. They know they're underfunding education. We gave this one example for why 2261, court, you really can't trust them. Remember the Basic Ed Act in 1977 promised, commencing in the 1980-81 school year, reimbursement, this is from transportation, shall be at 100% as closer to as reasonably possible. That was the 1977 version of 2261. We promised. Well, the OFM study as recent as 2008 said, well, they're only 65%. And this is consistent with JLARP's study, another OFM study, OSPI studies. So these promises, what one legislature promises the future legislature will do, are empty. One of the best things we came up with, or one of the most interesting, was this is that the state had one budget analyst that they had testified. And this is what he told his colleagues before the 2009 legislative session. It was on a lighter note, I should tell you, that the legislature, the 2009 legislature, will be a veritable cornucopia of ideas on no-cost options. And that's exactly what 2261 is. It's a lot of great talk, but no dollars. It's a no-cost option. So we're back to the state is violating our constitutions or rules. State funds supply our public schools with far less than what is needed to provide all kids the education mandated by our Constitution. The state passes laws and does lots of studies, but it does not amply or fully fund education. The state will ultimately pay for the students left behind, pay for their education now, or pay for them later through unemployment, welfare, and incarceration. And that's then where the court said the legislature's ordered to proceed with real and measurable progress to fully fund actual costs and amply providing all Washington children the education. Now, we did cross it. And I guess one of the best ways to summarize what we did cross appeal is this showing real and measurable progress. You know, that's pretty weak. And one example, Skip Priest, who was actually a fantastic witness at trial, I'm going to read a passage of his testimony where he said, every day, every week, every month, every year that we do not address this issue means that additional students will drop out as well as students will not be able to meet the requirements of our society. It's easy to talk about numbers. It's easy to talk about statistics. comes right down to it. Every kid we lose is something that's very, very real. And the great tragedy of this long debate and delay is that we're not talking about numbers. We're talking about real world kids. Our cross appeal is that showing just progress isn't enough. We've asked for a firm deadline at the end of the next school year for the state to actually comply with this first step of complying with the Constitution they were told to comply with 30 years ago. So going on to the next steps, the Supreme Court, we've asked for our argument at the end of this year, the end of November, beginning of December. The state has filed two requests for extensions to file their briefs, which kicks everything back. We still have the request out there for the end of November, beginning of December. The Supreme Court hasn't ruled on whether they will grant that request. Frankly, I think the Supreme Court will deny it because the state's managed to push it back the briefing schedule enough that we'll probably be ready at the beginning of next year. So what's going to happen at the beginning of next year? Right now, we still have a binding court order. And the fact that they've appealed doesn't mean they don't have to follow it. I mean, if a trial court orders a deadbeat dad to pay child support at $200 a month, the deadbeat dad can't say, oh, I'm not going to pay it because I've appealed the ruling. No, they still have to pay it. Well, what's going to happen in January here is every single legislator is going to take this oath where they say, I affirm to uphold constitution laws of the state of Washington. Remember this chart showing the funding gap? We've got a prettier version now on the news website. That's what it looks like. And the trial that we had was based on the 2007-2008 school year, because that's the year that state auditor testified under his office, testified under oath, was fully verified and accurate. Here's the number that the trial court found was unconstitutionally low. This is what the state's response so far has been.
Yeah.
Now, and I understand that the pragmatic reasons, you heard some of them here, we've got the social service people who want money, the healthcare people who want money, we've got all these natural resources, transportation, we have to balance things. Now's not a good time. Now's just not a good time to comply with the Constitution. Got two pictures to end with. This is the school, speed limit sign outside my son's office. Now let's just imagine for a second that we've got an ordinary citizen driving his car, and they just blow right through the speed limit. They blow through that speed zone, and they get pulled over by a cop. And the citizen tells the officer, today's just not a good day for me to obey the speed limit. The cop probably is not going to let the driver off with just a warning, but even if the cop does, says, okay, fine. You blew it this time, but don't let it happen again. If the driver says, and thinking about it, this whole school year is not going to be convenient for me to obey the speed limit. I'm going to blow through the speed zone every day this school year, and next school year, and the following school year, but trust me, like Thomas 261 says, trust me, by 2018, I'll start obeying the speed limit. They're not going to get off. So let's change this a little. Let's say that's a state elected official driving our state. Instead of being just a speed limit sign, that's the Constitution that, remember, they all swore to uphold. What the state is saying, frankly, is that now's not a good time to obey the Constitution. We'll get around to it. This is the 2261 argument. We'll get around to it by 2018, but just now, not a good time. I know some of you have heard me talk about this before, but my wife was born and raised in rural Mississippi. Her public schools desegregated, not integrated, desegregated over a decade after Brown versus Board of Education, over a decade after our Supreme Court told the states that the Constitution required them to desegregate their schools. This is George Wallace. Standing outside the door, remember where he was saying, segregation yesterday, segregation today, segregation tomorrow. There's not a single person in this room that thinks that decade-long delay in public schools in Mississippi was excusable. And yet, here we're standing here today, not one decade, not two decades, but three decades after our state Supreme Court in the Seattle School District case said the Constitution requires our state to fully fund our public schools, and our state officials are standing there saying, you know, it's still not a good time. And they have excuses. Unconstitutional underfunding last school year, unconstitutional underfunding this school year, unconstitutional underfunding next school year, but trust me, sometime in the future we'll fix it. That's where we're going to be facing with the legislature coming this year. I don't think the Supreme Court will issue their ruling before the legislative session ends. And so the legislature is going to have to make a choice. Are they going to obey the Constitution, which there is a binding court order now? Or are they going to continue to be the George Wallaces of our state and our generation, saying, you know, make it. Last thing is we've got some more information on the Cleary case. I've got a handout that's in the back that sort of summarizes the key rulings. There's the website to get the court's full ruling. There are daily summaries that were done of the testimony, if you're at all interested in that. That funding gap chart I showed you, there's a link there too to where we have the charts for statewide as well as a host of districts all across the state. Right now, the news group, which is Network for Excellence in Washington Schools, and technically there were three sets of plaintiffs in this lawsuit, the Cleary family, a public school family from Jefferson County, the Fennell family, a public school family from Snohomish County, and then News, Network for Excellence in Washington Schools, which is a coalition of what's now over 100 community groups, educational organizations, and school districts of all sort of demographic sizes from all across the state. One last thing I would request is, of course, the more we haven't filed our final brief yet in court, and the more we can say we represent that group's over 100 or over 150, over 200, please look at the website to see if your school district can join as well. That's all I have to say. I'm happy to answer questions now.